Good afternoon, everyone. Yes, welcome to this talk. My name is Henrik Kramselund, or Kramse for short. My pronouns are he, him, and all of my slideshows and educational materials are on GitHub. My user Kramse at GitHub, and this one is called Getting Started in InfoSec. It's in the repository security courses, which have all my educational materials for everything I do. So please share and use and get inspired if you like. There's some contact information, and just to sum it up, I've been using internet for many, many years. I've been a network and security consultant for about 25 years plus. I have gone through, of course, a lot of education myself. And what I'm trying to do today is try to get you started in a more nice way, because it can really be overwhelming getting to know security. So I'm trying to get all of my experience from learning network and security myself, being a consultant, but also when I teach at CAE, which is the Copenhagen School of Design and Technology, I think is the English name. And I'm also a little bit of an activist, but we can take that over a beer in the bar. The goals for today is to inspire you to create a goal for your education. We have this quote, the old one, a goal without a plan is just a wish. And trying to learn something as big as networking or security or even the two together can be completely overwhelming. So many resources are available, so many places to look, so many people to listen to, and everybody that has gone through this education by themselves have, of course, experience, and maybe it has not been the best way they learned it. I learned it from some old obscure papers that were not very easy to follow or read, and there are much better resources today. So I'm trying to point you to some of the resources that I'm using. So mostly this will be inspired by things that I actually do in my day-to-day work. I'm also going to point you to a few core concepts that I think you should know and learn. And I'm quite stubborn in this regard. I can be an old grumpy man sometimes, but I really, really feel that there are some key points that you need to learn if you want to work in networking and security. Some of them are just a need to know. And if you don't know these things beforehand, it will be much harder to go further in network and security. But if you, on the other hand, acknowledge that this is needed, a prerequisite for learning network and security, I think you will have a better and better experience and will easier learn some of the more advanced concepts. And of course, we all want to learn the latest concepts, but it can be really hard. And even though I have been working in the industry for 25 years, I have a master's from the University of Copenhagen. There's definitely papers that I just browse. There's definitely things I don't understand about security, and there have been large parts of security that I never look at. I'm never looking at Bluetooth security. I'm not looking at infrared security. I have just decided these big areas are not something that I want to invest the time. I don't have the time available. So I'm trying to inspire you to make a plan for your own wishes, what you want to learn. And as an inspiration, I have taken a security engineering as a job role, which is one of the things that you could use to guide your adventure into this, depending on what kind of job role you currently find interesting. They will have a list of wishes. Again, they have a wish from the employer who they want to hire, should have everything and the kitchen sink and should be unicorns and have these 50 years of experience, and if they are young and agile without a family so they can work 100 hours a week, that would be great. So sometimes getting to these job role and jobs that you can apply for will have a list of things that you may want to learn. And this is actually quite a large list, and it's a list that actually includes many different fields within security. So having a person that can do all of this, that's like really, really difficult to find. And especially in Denmark, we have a shortage of security people. So they are going to hire, they are hiring people that don't have all of these skills. So don't be discouraged from applying for a job, even if you don't have all of these subjects as ready knowledge right now. We can also go to some of the core concepts and go to some people that have done various categorization of these fields of network security, network and security. And one of the categorizations that I really love is the one from the IC squared, the common body of knowledge. It has been developed over lots of years, so it's kind of a nice categorization of the fields of network and security into more manageable, they call them domains. Other models will call it something else. But just by looking at categorizations and not trying to learn all of it at the same time may help you. So you can decide, I would start with this one, which is the one that I know most about, which will be easiest for me to get started in. And some of these will be quite technical, but actually some of them are not as technical. So network and security is a technical field, but in many ways it's not a technical field. There's a lot going on with security. And I think this one, the 8 domains of the CISSP, Common Body of Knowledge, is a nice way of structuring this. So I came from a network, communications and network area and loved networking. So I went into communication and network security and found it very easy to read some of these resources. But when we get to like risk management, that's not a preferred area for me, so that's quite hard. But I know some people in the audience are experts in that. I'm looking at one in particular who's probably more of an expert in risk management, talking to C-level executives. And I don't like to talk to C-level executives. I would rather talk to nerdy people about packets, which is already in the program. In my village later today, we're going to be talking about packets and protocols, 10G, playing with packets. So I love that more. But using these various taxonomies or models, you can decide which subjects to look at first. As an example, I have also taken this one, which is called the Juniper Networks certifications. Juniper Networks is a large provider of network equipment being used across the world. Cisco is another one. All of these big companies, they have a very advanced and big programs for getting certifications in their products. And I love certifications. I enjoy certifications because they make you look at some of the areas that are not very common in the industry. Whereas if you're working in the industry, you will meet these 3 out of 5 things that you always do in a network. And then there will be 4 and 5, which you very rarely use. But getting a certification sometimes helps me at least to read up on some of the parts that I don't use regularly. But when they are useful, I will know about them enough to be able to research them and apply them in real life. So I enjoy certifications. I'm not saying that you should take certifications or invest the money in that. Some of them can be found freely. Some of them are more easily. You can find vouchers for at least some of the entry-level ones. And I know that definitely employers will use certifications. I love certifications because it's easy to search for the recruiters. We're talking about getting into security probably because you want to get paid doing what you love, network and security. So certifications is one of the ways to also get to know an area. And as you can see in this one, it's also divided into cloud and non-cloud stuff. And enterprise routing and switching and service provider, ISP, routing and switching. So depending on what area you want to work in, it may be applicable to other certifications. You can decide which track to follow. Then I would like to go back a bit and restart how to learn network and security. And I think some of this applies to probably other technical skills that you want to get to know. I call it learning at different levels. And for as an example, I will use the tool called the Nmap port scanner. It's included in the movie, the Matrix movie, which is one of the famous hacker movies. There's been a bit of hacking in that. They're running a tool called Nmap. It's actually a real tool, so it's one of the hacker movies that include a real tool. They are typing quickly with gloves on and fancy clothes, but it is actually a very useful tool. It's also one of the tools that I think is a need to know tool because everybody is using Nmap. You will not have a pen test in the world that doesn't use Nmap. Or at least I would not consider that a pen test. I would not consider that a good pen test. Everybody will use Nmap and they may use other tools, but Nmap is a port scanner that can check for open ports on the internet. And you can perhaps scan a little bit here. I'm pretty sure that we will get abuse messages if you try to scan the internet, the whole internet from here. And since I don't know who you are, I cannot really forward those abuse messages, but you can do some light scanning from here, and all of you in the tent here, at least, you're very welcome to practice Nmap scanning on my infrastructure. I have the AES number 57860. You can scan all my devices using Nmap from here if you like to and want to play with this. So this is an example of a must-have tool, must-learn tool, must be able to talk about this tool and understand the output from this tool. Because in this screenshot, we are seeing them run the tool with some options. We are seeing some output from this. And at the very bottom, I'm not sure you can read it at the back, there's actually an exploit being used. And in the movie, they gain access to controlling the power and can shut the whole thing down. But understanding the output can be just as difficult as actually running the tool. And in this case, using Nmap as an example, this tool has about 100 options. And if you don't even know Linux, you don't even know command line tools, then it will be even an obstacle to getting to run this tool. It has 100 options. But then you can look at the man page, because the man page for all of these Unix, Linux tools, command line tools, will of course explain how to use the tool. And then you can read these 3,100 lines about how to use these options. And this tool is actually so complex that multiple books have been written about the tool. Some of them are outdated, but some of the basic stuff is still available and useful and in the tool still. And of course, it has also been expanded with IP version 6, so that adds another dimension. But which of the 100 options should you use? How do you interpret the results from this tool? Looking at this specific tool, using this as an example, there are some prerequisite knowledge to using it. And to actually use it effectively in a job role, in an enterprise, in an organization, you will need to combine some knowledge. So to get started using this Nmap, you need to have some prerequisite knowledge. And the prerequisite knowledge is, what is a port scanner? And what is a port scanner? It's something to do with TCP/IP. But what is TCP/IP? Transmission Control Protocol / IP Internet Protocol. It's part of the Internet Protocol suite. And actually, that whole suite includes a lot of functionality. It's being used across the whole internet. It's being used for multiple purposes. It's being used for HTTP port 80. How many in here know HTTP and web servers, browsers? How many has run a browser? Yeah. Trying to activate you a bit. So getting to know a browser, having a little bit to know with web technologies, some of the people moving into security may come from a web developer background. So you will know HTTP port 80, and some of you may know that it runs on TCP. And now we already know a little bit more about what to expect when we do the scanning, because of course we will see web servers. But we need to know some basic stuff before we can use a port scanner effectively. We also need to know a bit of the inside and internals of the Internet Protocol Suite. There's something called a TCP session setup. So you need to research, how does TCP actually work? It works by sending a packet called a SYN packet, and then it gets a SYN ACK packet back, and then it sends an ACK. And then you can actually start sending a GET request and get a web page back from a web server. And that happens every time we use TCP, and that is some of the things that you need to know before you can run Nmap and understand the output. Then you want to run the tool, and running tools like Nmap requires some kind of platform operating system. It's usually not built into your operating system when you download it, buy a laptop. I don't think there's ever a laptop that has Nmap by default. They should have, in my opinion. It's one of the first tools that I always install. But luckily, this tool, which is one of the reasons I also really, really love this tool, it is that it supports Mac, Windows, Linux. It's open source. You can compile it and run it on a mobile phone if you like. It's available for all of us. So that sorts out one of the prerequisites for the hardware that you need. But then also Nmap, we are very lucky because it has a GUI front end, which is called SendMap, which is the screenshot shown here. So if you're a bit afraid of command line and command line options, that's great. You can still run Nmap, and I recommend people new to Nmap to run this GUI tool. And it's also a very, very nice GUI tool for learning Nmap, because it has profiles, it has a way to use the GUI to select options. There's a bit of explanation for all of these options. But also this tool actually includes the full command that is running. It's a bit mangled, but you can see nmap minus t for minus a minus v and then the IP address. So it's actually a nice tool for learning. But if you start out by watching a movie with techno music and they're just switching back and forth between command lines and running a lot of options, it can be really hard to learn this tool. So running a port scanner, you need to have a platform. My recommendation is to create a virtual machine with Kali Linux. We can discuss in another area which offensive Linux distribution to use, and there are some that are better for certain areas. If you want to do Bluetooth hacking, wireless hacking, SDR hacking, maybe some other Linux distribution may be better for that purpose. But the Kali Linux has been downloaded millions and millions and millions of copies and installed around the world. There are YouTube videos, more than 100,000 of YouTube videos in different languages with different accents. There are some in Danish even. Some of them will be short, 5 minutes. Some of them will be 15 minutes. Some of them will be hour-long videos about nmap. So use the right resources, and Kali Linux makes it very easy because then this tool is actually installed. So if you can follow the guide to install Kali Linux, which is also documented by YouTube videos, then you have a platform to run the tool. Then later on, when we have the basic stuff, we know how to run the tool, we need to apply it in a job role. And that is where it starts to become useful, and you can actually start to use it in different scenarios. Using scenarios is a way of, for me at least and my students, to say we want to perform some task. And I have included a list of tasks that I have used in real penetration testing scenarios. So I may want to do a full TCP scan, which is the first line. So this is actually a specific invocation of this tool with specific options that will produce an output file that I can work with. And then later on in some of these, there will be all sorts of magical constants around these commands that you may not know now, but splitting it up into different scenarios and trying to work through each of these scenarios will start to make it useful. And the first one with the nmap for all ports with the TCP, that's actually one of the commands that some of my students have used in their home networks. They have applied this knowledge of scanning all the ports, just getting an output of the open ports. And in one case, one of them came back and there was a MariaDB, which was a SQL database just connected directly to the internet. Found out it was a consultant that needed access a year ago, and nobody removed the access afterwards. And that is things that you can start to use pretty easily and pretty quickly after learning the basic stuff. So I hope that describes the process of getting to know a single tool, getting started with this single tool, and then you can expand on that knowledge. So there's no reason to go and read all the options for nmap because you don't need all the options. Especially, there's a large part of nmap options that has to do with being a bit, what you call it, hiding who you are, spoofing addresses and stuff. And if you are allowed to do nmap, which is quite easy to get access to if you have a network. If you're running in a lab network, you can run it. So we don't need these options immediately. And some of them actually don't work really well anymore. So I just recommend getting permission to run nmap. And that's actually quite useful. And try it out in a lab environment or some camp that you make with your friends in a forest. You can try out nmap on a network. So this is actually what I would recommend as a quality scan of an enterprise. If you did these scans, took all the output, focused on the output for the different parts, that would actually be quite useful in many circumstances. There's one called SSH scan, which scans for port 22. 22 is, of course, an administration port for Linux machines and other Unix-like systems. And that is actually, by itself, very important and interesting. Who can SSH to our machines? And then you can ask people to say, maybe the whole internet does not need access to SSH on our ports or machines, because then they can try logging in. And actually, when you put something on the internet, people will try to log into SSH immediately, within minutes. You can try it here on camp. Put a machine on an IP that has not been active for a week, and immediately, within minutes, you will see attacks on these ports. Going back to some of the categorization, I also try to structure my learning, my teaching into kind of following the OSI model. Because the OSI model and the Internet Protocol Suite model goes from some physical layers and up through the protocols. And in many cases, I think it makes sense to secure the lower layers before the upper layers. So for instance, removing the possibility of accessing port 22 makes it, it doesn't care, we don't care if there's a bad password if you cannot get access to that port. So securing the internet and the network from below is my recommended way. And you can also use that in your learning if you want to get started. Start from some of the lower levels, understand what's going on, and then of course you get to some of the higher levels and different applications where it splits out. And I can tell you there are hacking tools for all applications, all protocols, so even if it's a niche technology, there will be some kind of hacking tool for that niche. Already I have asked you to do a lot of different things, and it is difficult to get to know all of these things without drowning. And one of the bad things is if you try to bite over too much immediately, but there are some things that you need to know at a certain point to be able to run security and network and scanning and doing all sorts of other stuff. And I actually believe some of these things should also be taught to some of our bosses, some of our management should at least know some of these things, because then they would be better at enforcing security. So you need to know a little bit of basic protocols, and it may not be that interesting to read about that, but that will make it much easier to understand nmap output, but it will also make it much easier to understand the output of a $5,000 tool. Because it runs nmap at the bottom, it will report the same information as the nmap tool in many cases. And without this knowledge about the basic protocols, then you won't be able to understand what's going on in these $5,000 tools. And it's not a joke. Some of these commercial pen testing tools actually cost $5,000, which is why a lot of people in Denmark, at least, are not allowed to buy them. So you need to know a little bit about Ethernet. You can practice Ethernet on a camp like this. You can connect to the network. You can put up a Raspberry Pi. You can see the Raspberry Pi getting hacked. And then you can turn it off. And that was fun. And you can drink a beer at the bar. And then you can reset the flashcard or put in something different with a better password. And then probably it won't get hacked. You need to know a little bit about IP version 4 and ICMP, which are some of the lower level protocols. But you can later add Wi-Fi. So you don't have to learn Wi-Fi immediately. So some things are also okay to push to a later time. And IP version 6, even though I wrote my thesis about IP version 6 20 years ago, and I love IP version 6, you don't have to learn it as the first thing to get started with hacking and network and security. Transport layer, transmission control protocol, TCP, UDP. You need to know a little bit about that because that's some of the core protocols like HTTP using TCP, DNS uses UDP, so you need to know at least a little bit about TCP and UDP. And then there's a common upper layer protocols like dynamic host configuration protocol, DHCP. You need to know how to set up a small lab network so you can test out things. DNS, of course, with the domain names, but you also need HTTP and HTTPS because everything is running HTTPS today. And many people in Denmark are actually configuring HTTPS in a bad way. So that's one of the most common findings in our reports. People are using bad and insecure protocols. Yeah, just using DNS as an example, if you just look into that protocol, you can actually make an impact for your organization. So that's just a single area of this where you can actually start to get useful quickly. I like to learn new concepts from books. There's lots of resources. You can probably mention podcasts, YouTube videos, profiles on the internet, blog posts. Blog posts are not as common anymore, but there's lots of resources on the internet. They are great for a single subject if you know the area already. But if you want to learn a new area, I highly recommend books, and books can be found often freely. Legally also, the book at the bottom is a web application security book by Andrew Hoffman. It's available for free from nginx.com if you give them an email address and a few items of information, and you can unsubscribe to the newsletter, and they actually do unsubscribe you from the newsletter and don't think they sell off the information, but you can get a book for free about web application security. And the thing I like about books is that they typically have some kind of clear structure. They have an editor. they probably go from some level onto some other level. So they go from kind of a basic level towards some kind of complete goal. And often they will have exercises available. Some of the books that I recommend also have things you can download, lab content, packet dumps for networking and so on. So it's quite easy to get like an introduction into an area at least. And in the old days, books were like 400 plus, but I'm seeing lots of books that are only like 200, 250, 300 pages now. And it actually gives me a lot of satisfaction. And some of my students have told me, gives them satisfaction to actually read a book from cover to cover. So we use this web application security in a web security for web developers course in Copenhagen. And we read the whole book. It was short enough that we could read the whole book. You can also go to my courses and exercise booklets. I don't have an editor, so they won't be as great as some of these books. So getting a book is my recommendation for learning some of these things. Then when you know these basic protocols, you have perhaps read one of these books, you can then dive into a part of the area. You can start to go in different directions. You will have the basic level that will enable you to explore on your own. And that's actually what you want to do at a later stage, because you want to learn something specific. You probably got interested in some specific attack, some specific area. And I think now you are ready to dig deeper into those parts. For me, it's typically packets and packet analysis, capturing packets, port mirroring, trying to work with network traffic. And that's some of the things that we can do on camps like this. We can just set up a machine, see that we're getting scanned, and immediately after we got online, we actually got scanned in this network. So your machine on this network, if you're running a public IP address on the BornHack SSID, you will get network attacks. And that's something you can work on in this network, and you can actually also do that at home. Maybe a little bit difficult if you have a very bad small CPE router from an internet provider. Also, you should, in your learning materials, make sure that you cover different formats. Because when I grew up, it was very common to have these ASCII text files, and it was very common to have these academic papers, which are kind of in two columns and a big abstract at the start. And you should force yourself to be able to read these different formats. So make sure that you include different formats, different resources. And as you get to know different sources, you will recognize names, programs, peoples, authors, sites, and some sites will be specialized in different areas. So I kind of make a mental note. So if this Spafford person writes something new, I put it on a to-read list, and it's a professor who wrote some of the old internet security text. So if he writes something, I will definitely try to read it, because it's typically something that has good content. So I force my students to read old hacker text files, computer science papers, but there's web articles, blog posts, books, chapters, standard documents, internet requests for comments are the defining documents about the protocols that we use. So you should at least be able to read the table of contents. You should know it exists. There's one that documents TLS 1.2. It's horrible to read. I don't force my students to read all of it, but they should at least know that this is where it originates. This is where it comes from. I have a little bit of very, very stubborn, focus on some things that I force my students to use. I guess most people are getting exposed to Windows along their childhood, forcing people and children to run Windows or Mac. Some of these things are getting used by people, tablets and so on. But I also really love open source. So I force my students to learn open source, because there's just so much great open source that ignoring it will make your life worse. You can actually make your life so much better by using open source, knowing it exists, and you can probably solve 90%+ of your task by using existing open source. So I force people to use Unix, your open source, and then the next point is Linux Unix, and I find that Unix Linux knowledge is necessary. It is something that I force my students to do. They cannot really pass my courses without having a virtual machine. We don't have to do complex stuff with this Linux, but we need to be able to boot it up, shut it down, boot it up, run nmap, shut it down. That is something that you must be able to do because a lot of the newest tools are written for Linux, Unix, and BSD. So without having this knowledge, at least a little bit of knowledge, you will be restricted in what you can actually do. Talking about open source, I also point people to Git and GitHub. Again, we can discuss if those are the best resource and where you can find everything. It is not, but it's one of the easiest way to find a lot of popular products. So you can actually go to GitHub, search for something like port scanning, nmap, you can find analyzers, you can find report writing tools for nmap, you can find lots of things with a few keywords. So tools and libraries and applications, you can find complete applications that often do what you want to do. Then you need a little bit of what I call programming experience. It's typically for automating stuff. I'm not a great programmer at all, but I know how to connect a few things. I know that there's something called XML that can be outputted from a tool, and then you can convert it into something called JSON, and then you can convert something like JSON into something called SVG, which can be displayed in a browser. There's a lot of things going on, and if you know that there's a tool that can do SVG, and there's a tool that can do XML, you can actually perhaps go directly to SVG from XML. And nmap can output in XML, so I can process that into HTML, and there's actually already, what is it that called? Not CSS, but the other one, XSSLT. Yeah, I cannot say it even. XSLT. So you can actually convert XML files from nmap into HTML files, which you can more or less copy into a Word document, and then you're halfway to writing a small report for your organization. Also, there's a few things that I really love. Ansible provisioning for installing and configuring software, because as security people, we also need to run servers, a little bit of servers. We need to be able to do it by ourselves. If we have to ask server people to provide a server, set it up for us, install a small tool from GitHub, it's just easier if we can do it by ourselves. One of the tools that I also recommend a lot, and I'm not affiliated with Elasticsearch, and I find the licensing is very much too expensive, at least for Danish companies. I think the entry level is something like 15,000 euros for a smallest production cluster. But you can use Elasticsearch for free, and it is kind of a nice service because you can cover a lot of ground with Elasticsearch. They have a lot of focus on security. So by using this tool, I can actually, from a lot of my tools, integrate a lot of sources into this, which is also some of the tools that I recommend and use are tools that can be used for multiple purposes. And that's very nice that you can use Elasticsearch as the backend for receiving a lot of data. And then you can actually work with that using a GUI called Kibana on top of Elasticsearch running in a browser. And they have a lot of sample data also. One of the things that I highly recommend is doing a Hacker Lab, and you can start creating that on your laptop today, because most of you will have a laptop that can run virtualization. You can run Docker. You can run a virtualized tool like VMware Player, Xen Hypervisor, KVM on Linux. You can run, I'm missing one.
Hyper-V on Windows.
Hyper-V on Windows, thank you for that, because that's definitely a nice way of doing that. And so most of you will have the opportunity to run some kind of virtualized machine, and you can get actual experience using the tools. And that will make it much easier to apply in a real life situation, of course, you have tried it before. Looking at especially Debian and Kali Linux are the ones that I propose that you look into, and that's because they have a lot of good documentation that they have existed for so many years. There's the Debian handbook and the Kali Linux Revealed, which are free PDFs that will walk you through any part of the installing and running a Debian server, which is a virtual machine, and then a Debian, which is a Kali Linux because it's built on top of Debian. So they will be very similar, again, using the same commands to update both of them, but it's coming from different repositories. They will be described in these complete books about the operating systems. So they are different operating systems, both based on Debian, and the Kali Linux actually has more than 300 tools pre-installed. So that's quite nice. You don't need to learn how to install a tool before you can start using it. I think it's a must for working in network and security, and I'm Luckily, not the only one saying that. So you will find lots of more important people than me saying that this is a requirement for running networking security things. Or you can go the other way and be an expert in Excel, and then you can take on a lot of these tasks for people working in networking security. That's also fine. I just want to point you to some of the resources that I have used. So in this presentation, there will be resources that I have used and are using. Open source, Python is one of the languages that I recommend because most of the tools exist in a Python version, and it may exist in other tools, also including C# and PowerScript. Is that the name? PowerShell, sorry. PowerShell, I could hear that it was wrong. PowerShell and other languages, but there's always a Python version. There's always a Python library. So Python is one of the tools, and I would recommend that you look into. And then you can find tools like MoleTrail, which can actually look at bad traffic and immediately start creating dashboards and stuff. So that's, again, one of the tools that I have used. And just by turning it on, I'm getting nice knowledge from the network about people that were infected with macrovirus and contacting bad servers on the internet. Also, this tool, Ansible, I'm just going to point to Ansible because I think it's quite easy to get started in Ansible, but also Ansible has a very broad target. You can target platforms such as network devices. So this is a long list of network devices which are probably among the ones that are being used in Denmark and other places. So it can be used for network equipment, and it can also be used for hosts and servers, application servers running Linux, OpenBSD, FreeBSD, and so on. There is Ansible support in Windows, but it's not complete, and probably you would rather use other tools for Windows. But for anything else, basically, you can use Ansible. So it's very generic. Running Ansible, Python, GitHub, it will quickly lead you into Git. So again, Git is a prerequisite for working in network and security. Elasticsearch is the one that I talked about, which has different, you could call them sub-applications, applications that feed Elasticsearch with data. So there's different parts of this ecosystem, and they typically don't call it the Elk stack anymore. It used to be the Elk stack for Elasticsearch, Logstash, and Kibana, but there's so many tools and components in this stack of tools, so they typically call it the Elastic stack today. And I enjoy this technology because they have done what is called an Elastic Common Schema, which are field definitions for stuff like an IP address. So if you're using and adhering to this standard in a tool, you can mix and match with other tools. So like the dream would be that you could take firewall logs from a Juniper device or a Cisco device, but if they end up in the same field in the database, the document store that they call it, then you can actually do a dashboard that will cover two different network technologies in your network. So this is one of the things that I enjoy by using Elastic. So this is hereby passed on to you. And there's also complete applications available. The one called Elastiflow, it's just a single line in this, but if you know how to boot a Linux machine, git clone a device, a repository, you actually get a complete dashboard with network flows in your whole network. So if we were monitoring the network using NetFlow in this network, which we are definitely not, we would actually be able to see every IP inside the network contacting servers on the internet connecting to us, seeing who uses the most bandwidth, what protocols and stuff. And that's a complete application you could install by just knowing a little bit of Linux and command line and Git. I will just keep on talking until they pull me down from this stage. So I will now, again, drop back a little bit and try to make it more structured. So when you get back and read this slideshow, perhaps you can decide what to do and where to start. I'm going to take, as an initial starting point, we have this called the Diploma in IT Security in Denmark, which is a, what you call it, government certified, acknowledged education, Diploma in IT Security, which is based on different courses. So this is a list of the courses that are needed to get this diploma. It's not to say that all of you should take this, but you can use it again for guiding your path into network and security. So it will have something, sorry, this is in Danish, but this one says governance. So governance is a large part of security. There's something about system security, servers and all of that. Authentication is a large part of security. There's also software security, because software is quite important for security. There's also network and communication security, which is about IDS and packets and so on. These courses, some of them are mandatory, some of them are electives that you can take after, but you need to have at least 60 of these ECTS points. And all of my educational materials for all of the courses that I teach is available on GitHub. So you can just start out reading some of these. And the lecture plans could be used at home to decide that you want to read this chapter and try to do these exercises, read the next chapters and do the next exercises. My exercise booklets are quite easy to follow, I think, and use some of these tools that I have mentioned already. One of them is the Communications and Network Security course, where I have selected some of the books that I prefer for this area. I know that I jump a little bit around in these slides, but this one called Linux Basics for Hackers Getting Started with Networking, Scripting and Security in Kali. It sounds almost as the title of this slideshow. And it is actually a book, 248 pages, describes how to get started on Linux. It's actually not a security book or a hacking book. It's a book about Kali Linux, and it will explain stuff like the file system. Something like running on the command line using grep for searching through text files, doing some basic scripting. How do you make a small script that can be run on a Linux? So it's 248 pages, and it's one that I, again, force my students to read. And by using that resource, along with the virtual machine, they get confident enough that they can run the tools when they get home in their own organizations. So that's actually a proven they can use this tool with Linux. We also have Practical Packet Analysis, which is from No Starch. I really enjoy that publisher because it's very practical books. This is a dedicated book about packet analysis, but it actually works through different scenarios. You can download packet dumps. You can start working on using an actual tool. In this case, it's Wireshark, which is one of the most common tools, which is also something that I recommend that you look into. Just by starting Wireshark, listening to an Ethernet on this camp, you will see a lot of traffic. And that can be fun in just looking at what happens in a network. And a lot of devices will just broadcast their names and who they are and what versions. And actually, the switches on this side, they will tell you what Junos version they're running. We're not running the latest, but you will see some security problems immediately by looking at traffic. Then there's a link to a lecture plan for this course, this specific course, and there are also the presentations. So this is kind of a package that you could use and go through communication and network security. And I think after reading these resources, or at least the chapters that I recommend, would make it possible for you to do some actual work within network and security. The books, if you want to buy them in hard copy, it's about 1,000 Danish kroner. It may be outside the budget that you may be interested in just browsing some of this. Some of the books can be found as, you can find the, what you call them, example chapters for download, so you can check before buying it, but also going to some of these Humble Bundles, which I highly recommend. You can get some of these books for as low as $25 for 15 books. And just by subscribing to the Humble Bundle, I have bought, I think 30 bundles by now, because I almost always buy the bundles, because then later I can go back and see, oh, was there something about data science? Yes, there was. And was there something about network security and hacking? Yes, there was. Do I need to learn Python? Yes, there was a Python book. There was actually a Python bundle with 15 books. So Humble Bundle is one of the places where you can get it for cheaper. Some of the other books that I recommend, like the Debian Administrator's Handbook, the Kali Linux Revealed, they will describe everything about running a server, installing packages, configuring the network, what to expect when you boot up your Linux system. There's also this book that I have recommended already, the Web Application Security, and then there's one called Grey Hat Hacking, which is recommended because it has bite-sized chapters. So if you want to work in different areas of security, this Grey Hat Hacking book has enough of an introduction into various areas that is a very highly recommended book, and it's also in the fifth edition which probably speaks to its value. They decided to upgrade it and release it, upgrade it and release it, upgrade, upgrade and release it. So it's one of the books that I am very fond of during my work and my teaching. You also probably want to invest a little bit in network equipment. I use OpenBSD, I use switches from Juniper. There's actually a small pile of switches at the end of camp near the garbage, because we have some surplus switches that we're going to throw out. And they are actually excellent for learning VLAN stuff. They can do some of this basic stuff. They can run SNMP for management. So probably get some switches, some Ethernet equipment, and running in a small isolated network, running these tools is probably recommended to avoid attacking people on the internet. If you mistype an IP address, you might be attacking the NSA, so make sure that you do not mistype addresses. And as I said at the bottom, above or similar can often be found lying around in offices. Ask if you can take it. I have taken home a lot of equipment over the years and played with it at home to get better in these. And being able to actually do stuff with equipment is important. I also recommend getting wireless cards, and it's always a problem recommending wireless cards because they go through a revision and changes all the time. But to learn a lot of these methods and technologies for hacking Wi-Fi, you probably can get away with a cheap one. It may be that you have one lying around already. It may be that it only supports 2.4 gigahertz, but if you're looking at the security protocols, you don't really care if it's 5 gigahertz or 2.4, because the security protocols are the same. And the one that I have used a lot of time, the TP-Link TL-VN722N, that was about 80 kroner, so it's less than a small snack box at the food vendor. So if you just skip one of these and order a cheap card, you can actually start it doing Wi-Fi hacking. And then later on, you may want to buy one that, I think the one I have below here, that was about 300 or 500 Danish kroner. But you don't need the latest and greatest to get started, and you can typically find it in discarded piles at work sometimes. Also, if you have money for it, buying a USB Ethernet card is a card, it's just a dongle, is recommended, because then you can actually do very low level looking into packets, which is what I really love doing. And that will again immediately start to bring up something interesting to look at. It's 47 minutes now, and I would love to have some questions. You can find me at CAM. I will be here until Friday. You can send me questions via email. You can find me on Twitter. You can see my mobile number. It's Signal enabled, so you're welcome to ask me questions.
Yeah, let's give a round of applause for CAM.
Yes. Nice talk, Kramse. I completely agree with basically everything.
Nice.
What is your take on the difference between having a formal education and taking certificates and then learning the stuff yourself? I see that as three distinct categories. How do you see them play together, and what should you go for?
It's a great question. And beware when I answer this question now, I am definitely not trying to offend anyone. I'm not a native English speaker, so I may use the wrong words. And in my family, we say it's okay to use the wrong words, and then people can ask and we can do a more detailed answer, probably explaining more what I mean and think about this. So I have a formal education, and I'm not using much of my formal education. I think some of the most important parts that I learned from computer science at university was to read, to write big reports, which is a very useful skill in network security. But a lot of the network security I have learned informally over the years by things that I have researched myself. Today you can go to a lot of security conferences, but I have learned a lot by investigating myself. So if you investigate by yourself, read some of these books that I have recommended, never take an exam, never take a certification, you can be an excellent resource. But I do think that formal education has its place, because there you are required to go through some parts and also the parts that you don't really like. So you are forced to do some investigation into, for instance, some of the Juniper certifications. I had to read pages and pages of OSPF, which is a protocol for routing, and I had to learn all sorts of different configurations that I have never used, but it still required me to learn a little bit about this OSPF. So you can definitely work in security without having a formal education, but I think your job situation will also be a little bit more risky, because if you get fired, you don't get a job for a year. People might not value the things that you did in your previous job. So I hope I didn't offend anyone and you understood what I meant, but I really do think that both formal education and certifications has its place. And that said, I think it's horrible the way that we do these certifications today, because I've tried to taking one with a proctor that wanted to like investigate my underwear more or less. I had to put the camera under the table, and it does prevent some people from taking these. And I think we should try to eliminate that burden. I don't know how we would do that. Open source certifications is not really taking off. Oh, I answered that very long.
We have one more question.
Thank you. You talked a lot about how to increase your confidence with network security. A situation I've had for a while that I think is quite common among hacker scene is I know something about computers, and I have no idea how to get a job in computers. Because that's like a completely different skill from actually knowing computers. Do you have any advice on this?
I do, because since we have this extreme shortage, we have a very unhealthy environment for computer security people in Denmark, because they cannot fulfill the positions. So the ones that are working are overworked and so on. And I have been discussing how we could bring in people into these areas. You say about computers in general, but also computer security might actually be easier to get into than the technical parts, because in many cases you want to do like reviewing output from tools, you want to do like this Excel working with risk and stuff like that. So my advice would probably try to find some scenarios where you can actually perform some basic tasks. And then you will have to go to one of these companies that cannot fulfill their positions and say that you are eager to learn. And you may agree, again, I think it's a little bit because some of the employers will take advantage of this, but you can say that you want to start working at a low salary, perhaps lower than your colleagues, because you do not have the same experience. And then you can make an agreement like 3 months, 6 months from now, we are going to evaluate how much you can fulfill now, and you will get the same pay. So trying to get an initial low pay and be able to do some basic scenarios from end to end, that's actually the important part.
Do we have a final question?
I hope that helped.
Nope. Let's give a round of applause for Kamsi.